This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. So, I don't know about you, but I have a few non-negotiable self-care rituals. Admittedly, they've changed pretty dramatically since I've had kids. I don't have time for super long showers or skincare routines, but even when I feel like I don't have enough time for myself, I do make time for mindfulness. Therapy is one piece of my mindfulness journey, and I've been super grateful for the help that therapy has given me in navigating the new normal that is my life. It supports you in learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries, and it also really empowers you to be the best version of yourself. Even if you don't have a ton of time on your hands, resources like BetterHelp can make therapy achievable on a tight schedule. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/goodtogether today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/goodtogether. As we transition from summer into fall, it doesn't mean that we need to miss out on grilling season. Honestly, nothing beats a juicy burger or vegan sandwich of your choice on a soft bun, but at the same time, who wants to give up their health goals? That's where Hero Bread comes in. I've been using Hero Bread for weeks now, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. Their brioche buns are perfect for backyard barbecues and sandwiches. They're soft, fluffy, and delicious, and honestly, you'd never guess that they have zero net carbs and no sugar. But what really blew me away were their new Hawaiian rolls. So I made sliders last weekend, and my family really couldn't believe they were low carb. The texture is spot on, and they really do melt in your mouth. As someone who does enjoy watching my sugar intake, Hero Bread has been a lifesaver. I can enjoy sandwiches, toasts, even French toast on weekends without the guilt. It's packed with fiber and protein too. Want to keep the carbs out of your bread without sacrificing flavor? Get 10% off at hero.co with code GOODTOGETHER. That's GOODTOGETHER at HERO.CO.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Listeners, I am so excited to welcome Remy Morimoto Park to the podcast today, also known as VeggieKens on social media. Remy, I wonder if you can give us a little bit of intro and let us know really about yourself and how you got started with VeggieKens.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat today. And I started my food blog many years ago. I am a vegan recipe developer, so that's primarily the content that I share. I love to cook. I love to share recipes that make plant-based eating helpful and just very easy for everyone and kind of a little bit more fun than salad. And aside from that, I love holistic living, wellness, and I'm very passionate about animals and also small actions that make a big impact for the planet.
Absolutely. And actually, you know, before we get into talking about vegan-based eating and really thinking about some of the work you've done with your blog and your social media accounts, listeners, one thing that Remy and I were talking about before we pressed record was, you know, thinking about the world of sustainability and how we're all not, you know, perfect. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But I'm curious to know, like, Remy, as you have you always been a vegan, or, you know, how did you get started actually like thinking more about, vegan-based eating, and especially with this lens of, you know, not being the most perfect person in the world as none of us are? Like, tell me a little bit about your journey.
So I actually started, I guess, a vegan journey when I was in college, and initially it was because I had these terrible stomach aches all the time. which I realize were linked to dairy. A lot of people struggle with like digesting dairy, especially Asian people. Actually, it's very common. So I cut the dairy, and I think by nature, I was just experimenting with a lot more vegan recipes because, you know, a dairy-free mac and cheese is essentially a vegan mac and cheese. And I started to see the term all over, like on the blogs I was reading, you know, it was kind of a little bit more trendy at the time, but I didn't really understand what it really meant. I kind of thought of it more as a diet more than anything. And I approached it from definitely a health perspective because that's what I noticed first, that I felt so great. I could feel a physical difference for like the first time in my life. But I think the more that I immersed myself in the lifestyle and I got to meet other vegans and, you know, I joined my school's vegetarian and vegan club, that's when it kind of started to make a little bit more sense to me. And I think the reason why I'm still vegan now, I don't know if it really would have stuck if I hadn't learned about kind of the environmental impacts and also, of course, the ethical impacts. So the longer I was vegan, the more I fully understood what that meant. And I also think it healed a lot of things for me. I got sober around the same time as well. I think I was just being a lot more intentional about the things that I was consuming and the choices that I was making. But it was the first time in my life that I really felt good about a lifestyle choice and also eating food. You know, that's something that I struggled with for a very long time. So yeah, that just all kind of went together and it was great. It was a huge lifestyle shift for me. And I would say the environmental aspect and kind of the more sustainability stuff, that kind of came towards the tail end where it just kind of made sense to me. I felt like I took on this lens of looking at the world in a more compassionate way and trying to learn compassion for myself too. So I owe that all to veganism.
So I love that journey. And I feel like the way that most of us get into sustainable living is just like that. It's not necessarily that we have this aha moment about the environment, right? Some people, they do that way. But I think most of us kind of have, you know, a situation in our life that makes us stop and think. And so, yes, for you, it was, you know, a dairy intolerance. For me, it was just like thinking about my fashion consumption and just how I had been raised in this kind of like hyper consumer culture and then had gotten my career started there and thought, wait a second, like, I think this is probably not the best way for me to live. And also, you know, it's not the best way for us to live from the planet's perspective. So tell us a little bit more. So, okay, you started to become vegan. You started to cook with vegan, you know, ideals, then kind of started to style yourself as a vegan. It made a lot more sense. When did you start to like build a brand around vegan food and then the blogging aspect? How did that start for you?
It's a really funny story, actually. I was in college and I think I mentioned my relationship with food. So I was working through an eating disorder, actually, and I started the Instagram account as a food accountability log and working with a nutritionist and a therapist. So it wasn't really supposed to be public facing at all, which I think is why I'm so comfortable being really open and transparent, maybe more so than the average person online. I kind of treated it like an online diary. And then because it's connected to Facebook and, you know, the nature of social media, like a bunch of my friends found it. And I was like, instead of deleting the account, I'm just going to make it a little bit more appetizing. So I put more effort into styling the food, making it look nice. And it was fun. It was almost like an expression for me, kind of like art, playing with the food, just, you know, being interested in food was something new for me. Like I had not had any interest in food prior to that. I was in fact like very afraid of food. So that was a great stepping stone for me. And then it just became something that I was really passionate about. And then it's been about, I think it's been maybe 8 years now. So now it's a full-time job, which I never could have imagined, but it's been incredible.
So Rumi, I thank you for being honest with us and sharing your story, you know, about your eating disorder and thinking through like how you choose to show up on social media, because I feel like, you know, there's such a movement now of people trying to take social media back a little bit, like back to the intention of what it was, right? When we all first started our own Instagram accounts or, you know, I mean, even Twitter to some extent, like it was almost a way to just keep track of one another and to kind of just share thoughts and ideas. And as the space evolved, we all found ourselves getting pulled into this vortex of perfection, hyper-styled shots, and just, you know, a lifestyle that didn't seem, I don't know, like authentic or even like achievable to most people. And I would say, as I talk to people who are interested in living more sustainable, they almost feel like the sustainable living is like the Instagram of like the lifestyle movement, right? Like, oh, everybody's perfect. Or, you know, oh, it seems too hard. Like I can't be vegan. I can't do it. And so tell me a little bit. I mean, we'll talk more about like how you approach cooking and your recipes and everything like that. But tell me a little bit more about how you respond to those questions. Cause you know, I can tell you how I respond to them all day long, but I'm curious to know, as somebody who's really in the space, specifically in the vegan cooking space, like how do you respond when people say that? I'm sure you've had family, friends, et cetera, do this with you all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, I'm a very extreme person. I think that's part of why I had like a lot of those issues in the past. Like once I start with something, it just gets, I can be very intense basically. And so with veganism, I feel like I did go through that phase where when I started out, I was so terrified of anything being, you know, cross contamination or same cutting board, or even just like things that you eat by accident that end up not being vegan. And after like many lifestyle changes, I've just come to realize for most people, it's not sustainable when it's really extreme. And I feel like the best way to approach a lifestyle change is to do your best within reason. And so, you know, if it comes to sustainability, I would say it's the same kind of thing. Do your best, but only to the point where it's something that you can actually sustain, because I think that's more effective than a month of maybe being zero waste total and then kind of going back to the plastic bags. But it is tricky. I think like in itself, the whole sustainable living is almost like an aesthetic with like the products that come out that you don't actually need to be sustainable. Like a lot of it is just reusing what you already own or just kind of stopping buying new things. So it's definitely tricky, but I think with all lifestyle changes, there's like many ways to do it. The best way is just to, I feel, be kind to yourself and just be realistic with what is doable for you to make it something that isn't stressful, but just more fun or like a very slow, gradual journey. And I think too, just on the topic of like being extreme, it's something that I really try not to be, especially as it relates to veganism. I pride myself in not being a very preachy vegan or encouraging anyone necessarily to go vegan. I would much rather share a recipe that is just like so good and happens to be vegan that someone's having it once a week, or, you know, like lattes, having it with oat milk instead. Those are little things that I really celebrate because I think that's how it kind of starts.
Absolutely. I think there's so much to the, oh, it's so good, it happens to be vegan. Like we're going to explore a little bit more of that too on Brightly. I actually, so my husband and I have been doing we've been on some medication lately that's really like gotten rid of our appetite. And it's been really, we've been struggling to like figure out like, okay, what are we going to cook? And one of my friends introduced me to this book that has a lot of like recipes that are designed to reduce inflammation. And they just so happen to be vegan, or a lot of them are. And actually, I don't even think they're styled as vegan, but as I'm making them, I'm like, oh, they're vegan. Well, there's been so many recipes that I have created that we are two people from Texas originally. Like my husband loves barbecue, but like, you know, grilling up a portobello with like a really good marinade. Like there's so many interesting things that we've kind of discovered. And I feel like there is that like element of like discovery and fun and just, you know, being graceful with yourself as you're trying out new things, right? Like you don't have to just say, here's my fridge, let's pitch out every single, you know, non-vegan item, but you can kind of start slow and figure out like what makes the most sense to you. And I feel like I love the oat milk reference. That's such a good one. Like, I think a lot of people, if you haven't had a good oat milk latte, you'd be surprised. Like, I mean, it gets pretty close, quote unquote, but like, what do you need? Like, do we have to be so close to like dairy, like milk anyway? You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think oat milk has taken the world by storm, which is great. And I'm excited about that for sure.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. Right. And you can even make your own oat milk, which we've shared recipes on that before too. So thinking more about like small steps that people can take this, because you and I are kind of on that topic. One thing that I've found to be really impactful, and I know you do too, is to think about food waste and like, you know, whether you're meal planning or, you know, creating a recipe that has some leftovers. Tell me a little bit about how you think about reducing food waste. Cause I'm like, that's like my thing. I'm like high-fiving myself when I do that. So I want to know your tips and tricks.
Yeah. Well, food is very important to me because I feel like I'm just constantly around food and spend the most time in the kitchen out of all the places in my house. So, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it. One is like the food itself and the other is just the kitchen. Cause I think there are so many things that we use in the kitchen that can be replaced with, infinitely reusable items. So that's something I'm also really proud to say that I've, you know, done a good job in that category. But food itself, I feel like the first easy step I would say is like composting scraps because it's inevitable that sometimes things are going to go bad. And I feel like it's easy to collect. I used to live in New York City and I was in a tiny apartment and I had to compost at the farmer's market, you know, once a week. And if I didn't make it, I was like, oh no, but I made it work. You know, you can keep a Tupperware in the freezer. It doesn't smell at all. Now I live in LA and I have a compost service. So that's been amazing, but there's always ways to kind of do it. And you'd be surprised, like your actual garbage can will not smell as much either without the food in there. So I think that's a really great step and can be essentially free if you have that service available, you know, through your community somehow. And I would say aside from that, just like being really organized about what it is that you're buying really helps to minimize food waste. And I also personally love the freezer. I am just notorious for like throwing things in the freezer and figuring out ways to use it. So
yes.
I feel like that's underrated. Like use the freezer, you know?
Yes, absolutely. No, we, so I just had my first daughter about 10 months ago and she, I mean, it's been quite a journey, but one thing that has really made me love using the freezer is prepping food for her. And just being able to not only, you know, make food for, you know, the grownups and the adults, but then taking the odds and ends that are left over from vegetables, et cetera. Like for instance, we just did grilled cauliflower steaks last night. And we had some leftover cauliflower. So I just threw it in. We have this, like, it's funny. It's like a little steamer food processor in one. It's called the baby cook.
I actually know what that is. Like,
yeah,
I don't have kids, but I do know what that
is. No, it's amazing. Actually, I think we're going to sell it on Brightly pretty soon. You know, it's one of those things that I like, it's called the baby cook. I don't think that baby needs to call it baby cook because I have used it for so many things for adults. But anyway, I just chucked that leftover cauliflower in that steamer, blended it up, and then had just like a little bit of cauliflower mac and cheese, quote unquote, for her. And so from my perspective, you're right. It's not only an organization thing, it's a creativity thing and realizing that like you can reuse a lot of those odds and ends, but you can also use that freezer. Like if it's about to go bad, cut it open, put it in the freezer. Like you'd be so surprised, especially raw ingredients too. You don't have to like even just, you know, be worried about, oh no, what do I make and then put in the freezer, right? I feel like that's been kind of an unlock for me lately too.
Yeah, definitely. I actually saw today, one of my friends posted on her Instagram story about open cans of tomato paste and like just throwing that in the freezer too, like
really
cube shape. And I was like, that is actually one I'd never thought of before. So I love that. And aside from that, I would say like product-wise, I mean, if you spend a lot of time in the kitchen, I feel like it makes sense to invest in like some kitchen towels. I haven't purchased paper towels in many, many years and it feels amazing. I think inevitably it pays for itself too, which is really nice. So, you know, just making swaps like that, I think are also super helpful and can make your freezer look a little nicer too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of reusable kitchen towels too. They also, I mean, look, they get stuff cleaner than a paper towel. As long as you have a good system set up to like handle your dirties and your cleans, like you can really get a lot done. So no, I love those swaps and just like, you know, giving yourself again grace. Like you're obviously not going to be able to do everything perfectly, but just understanding that if you can be a little bit creative, it's super interesting. Tell me a little bit more about maybe some of your favorite, we've talked about some of your favorite, like I guess product related swaps. And we did mention the oat milk latte, but what are some other like interesting, you know, maybe popular recipes that you've created amongst, you know, both vegans and non-vegans? Be curious to know, like, what are some that come to mind for you?
I would say the ones that come to mind are definitely the ones that maybe don't scream vegan when you look at them. So it's like noodle stir fries, like a pad thai, for example, or like a peanut cucumber noodle dish, things like that, that don't have any meat in them, but don't scream vegan. Like there's no tofu, there's no nutritional yeast. I think that's a great starting point for a lot of people. Yeah. It's just like something that seems normal. And when you think about it, like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are vegan.
That's true.
It's like funny when people tell me I've never had vegan food and I'm like, I feel like you probably had fruit before. But sometimes that label can be a turn off for people. So it's understandable, you know? So I think I try to keep it a little more ambiguous sometimes. And I think the Asian recipes definitely seem to resonate a little bit more because I think that's kind of missing in the vegan recipe space a little bit, like cultural dishes as a whole. I think when we think of vegan food, we have a very Western idea of what that exactly looks like. You know, there's no real nutritional yeast usage in like Asia, really. And so I think it's just something that people can relate to that might be missing because food is so emotional for a lot of people and very personal. And I think when you see food that you recognize and is like nostalgic for you and it happens to be vegan, that might be more interesting than like having to switch not only the kind of food that you're eating, but now like the dishes and the cuisine that you love and grew up with. So I've tried to kind of infuse a little bit more of that into my recipes lately.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to ask you a little bit about what's inspiring you behind a lot of your dishes. And it does sound like there's a, you know, a big, you know, focus on Asian cuisine and wanting to kind of up level some of those recipes, both you were familiar with and then other ones to really bring in that vegan, point of view. Cause I agree. Like I'm not a nutritional yeast fan. I just cannot get on that bandwagon. Occasionally, like in a recipe, I can handle it. But one time somebody handed me some popcorn with like that sprinkled on top and they were kind of like, oh, it's cheesy popcorn. I was like, oh no, that does not taste like cheese. We are not doing that. But yes, I think just making sure that when people are, you know, going out and trying new recipes, giving them a variety, giving them, you're right, recipes that are familiar to them can be so important and so comforting. Especially ones that are like closely related, but they're like not trying to replace, because I feel like that's when you get in the hottest water, right?
Right. Anything faux meat, I am bound to get, I mean, a lot of engagement on the post, but it's not necessarily positive. So I'm personally not a fan of that. But I just think it's nice to know that you don't have to give up your culture or enjoying meals with your family to eat vegan. And that's something that I really believed when I first went vegan. I always brought my own food to like restaurants even. And I would kind of stress about spending long times of period with my family. Cause I'd just be like, this is not going to work for me. Like, how am I going to eat my salad? And then I realized that it's so much more fun also to even experiment or kind of test with your family and see how can we make this vegan or what kind of versions can we come up with? It's just a little bit more fun that way, you know, cause your options are a little bit more limited. So I think it kind of pushes you to be more creative about what it is that you can eat.
Absolutely. There were just so many things in there that resonated with me, but yes, just like trying to not be the odd one out when you're eating with family and friends, thinking through all of that has just been, you know, just an interesting piece. Like I said, I myself am not vegan, but I definitely go, you know, and try and eat as much, you know, as less meat as I possibly can. And actually, it kind of reminded me, you alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I want to talk about it because it's something that we see a lot ourselves too at Brightly and Good Together, which is kind of dealing with the negative comments or like the trolls in the comments. Because I don't know about you, I feel like it's like had an uptick recently where we're kind of getting shade from both sides of the spectrum. Like we've got the people who would never be vegan or never go meatless and just, you know, want to be angry from that perspective. And then you have the other people who are like trying to be the most, they're trying to be the most perfect, or, you know, they're over here with all these statistics and facts and, you know, opinions, because at the end of the day, a lot of sustainability related things are still opinion based because it's really, really hard sometimes to come up with the quote unquote most perfect way to do things. So then you have those people on the side, like kind of like, you know, like, yeah, why are you even comparing this to faux meat? Meat's terrible. So tell me a little bit about like, you know, especially coming from a place where you started with vulnerability and honesty and authenticity. Like, how do you personally deal with some of this interesting commentary going on?
I think it's a great question because you're right. From both sides, I actually get it. I'll have criticism from vegans also, you know, you're not vegan enough, or you shouldn't want to eat processed foods. It should be, you know, whole plant foods only. And then of course the kind of carnivore side, or just people who are resistant when it comes to anything vegan or vegetarian. And I think I try to look at them as an opportunity for education. And a lot of the time, I find that if you respond in a really kind way, it almost kind of makes them look silly because sometimes they're very unkind. But I try and approach it that way first because I think it's an opportunity to share something new. And half the time I feel like I'm surprised that, you know, they'll kind of come around and say, oh, they were genuinely just asking a question. So a lot of the time the question is kind of an in, I feel like, to have a good conversation, but There are definitely times where people have their opinions and it's just like, no matter what you say, they want to be right or insinuate that you're wrong for what you're doing. And the way I look at it is very much kind of everyone should do what they think they need to do for themselves. And that's part of why I'm also very careful about never saying, you know, go vegan or, you know, you've got to ditch the meat. I just kind of share mine and I tell them, well, you know, do as you like. This is what I like to eat. And that's kind of it. And it leaves less room, I would say, for kind of the criticism that I'm telling people what to do or being the stereotypical vegan. But I try my best. It doesn't always happen. I try my best to approach it as like an opportunity for learning. And, you know, if I'm able to even just agree with someone and also show them that vegans are not always going to fight you about what you believe, we can agree to disagree or respect each other despite having different opinions. I think that's really important too, because I do think it's great to eat more plant-based, but I'm personally not a believer that everybody needs to go vegan to be an environmentalist. I feel like it's something different for everyone. There are ways that make sense for everyone. Like for me, that'd be the kitchen. You know, for other people, it could be in the office. Like there's just so many ways that you could do better for the planet. It doesn't have to be vegan. And being realistic, there are so many reasons why somebody might not be able to be successfully vegan, including health, medication. It's just access. It's not a black and white thing. So I try to be open-minded, but I will say, I think it's best when I don't reply to comments right away sometimes. Take a breather, come back.
Totally. Yeah. Take a beat, come back. And you're right. I think from my perspective, I mean, there's so many different ways to look at it, but yeah, you're right. Like, I think it's symptomatic of a lot of what's going on in the world right now in general. Like, I feel like people have just kind of lost the ability to have constructive conversations. It just kind of quickly devolves into kind of shouting matches, if you will. But the other thing that you said that really resonated with me was, you know, thinking more about how to address some of these problems from the lens of accessibility. So understanding that many, many people live in food deserts. Many, many people don't have access to, you know, a lot of fresh ingredients, which, you know, for better or for worse, a lot of vegan cooking does require a lot of fresh ingredients. And so, you know, to say that a lot of these issues are really cut and dry and simple is to just totally not, you know, it's to totally miss the point. And that is really why, you know, we started this podcast, because we always felt like a podcast was a good forum to talk about these things, because they are conversations, they are ongoing. But it's something we're always working towards, both as individuals and, you know, as people, as, you know, that they're in the ecosystem. So I think it's super interesting. Well, Remy, I mean, look, I know we didn't even get a chance to talk about a lot of your cooking and your recipes, but look, listeners, we're going to include a ton of links, to, you know, Remy's blog, her social media, so that you can, like, you know, get into some of the things that she talked a little bit about. But kind of wrapping things up, I mean, we typically like to end our episode with the same question to all of our guests, because I'm always really fascinated to see how they answer it. So the question would be, you know, from where you sit, either as like a vegan food blogger or just an individual, what is exciting you the most about what you're witnessing in the ethical and sustainable sort of lifestyle movement going on right now?
I think what's been the most exciting is this open-mindedness to food or just doing things in a different way. And I think with that comes more understanding that there are different ways to do things. And I think maybe the acceptance that, you know, there is kind of a problem and we have to address it. It's kind of becoming a little bit more impossible to ignore. And I think what's been the coolest for me to see, at least on the brand side, you know, working with different food brands, are the brands that go out of their way to not only make kind of a, I guess, not net, but more, how do I say this? Instead of neutral, they're actually trying to go positive, if you know what I'm saying. So regenerative agriculture, for example, is one. Giving back more than you're taking. That's something that I see that's really exciting as a trend. And whether or not it's for, you know, to look better as a brand, like, I don't really care personally. I think it's an awesome thing to do. And I hope it becomes more of a trend, because we really do need to start, I think, putting in more than we're taking. We've already done that for so many years. So I hope to see that continue, you know, and that could be sustainably packaged vegan products. I think that could be awesome. There's just always room for improvement. But personally, I'm a big fan of doing more good than harm.
That's awesome. I love that. Yes, we are just starting to see the very, very first bits of that philosophy, I feel like, instead of just giving back just a little bit of profits or whatever. I think it's really, really exciting to see companies and brands taking things a little bit further. You're right, regardless of the reasons, because it's hard for us sometimes to figure what those are. Well, Rumi, thank you so much for joining us. I've had such a great time chatting with you. And listeners, like I said, we're going to leave links and everything. But if you want to find Rumi on Instagram, she's at VeggieKins, KINS.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to chat.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. And as a special thank you to our listeners, use code GOODTOGETHER to get 10% off all products in Brightly's brand new shop full of planet-positive swaps for your home. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.